be thankful.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we'll try to explain to you what's really going on in the world, not all the information you're going to be getting that's aimed at confusing you and misleading you and distracting you from the really important issues. Well, for this next hour, we hope to have with us Melody Cederstrom from Discount Gold and Silver. We're going to be talking about what's going on financially. And, of course, we always welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And, Melody, how are we doing?
I'm doing just fine, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
Well, certainly, as you know, Melody sells gold and silver, and certainly the markets, once again, are just sort of sitting there, sort of almost like they're dead, aren't they?
Well, they certainly are, although they had a little bit of a pullback today, which was kind of expected considering what we've been seeing in the markets. Maybe you had a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction here with some of the news that was put out, but also there was a lot of bad news that was also released, so it's hard to believe that gold really hasn't taken off to the upside. But again, you can see the pressure, the mining shares have been kind of really been manipulated to the downside, so they've been hit hard, along with the Dow Jones being down, over 650 points since the election. So as we're heading into the end of the year, you're going to see a lot of fluctuations in these markets. And I just look at the gold and silver as a buying opportunity at these levels.
Well, you know, I think it's very interesting. A lot of certainly very wealthy people are selling their stocks. And the reason they're selling their stocks is because, of course, they can get a low capital gains tax now. Whereas, of course, they wait until next year. They sell it. It's all probability. Capital gains will go up, so they just as soon get rid of their stocks now. And many of them, I really believe, and I think justifiably so, believe that we're going to see the market turning down next year. There are problems all over the world that are going to influence the American stock market, and I think probably the market is going to continue falling. But if you look and see what's going on in Europe, I mean, this is amazing. We're not hearing too much about this, but there are demonstrations in Greece and in Spain and in Italy and Portugal because the people certainly don't want the government cutting back on their benefits. They don't want them cutting back on their pensions. They don't want them cutting back, certainly, on their health care and all the other wonderful benefits that they've been getting from their government. The trouble is the governments can't afford them. The governments don't have the money. The governments are having to borrow money just to keep operating today. Most of the economies are just simply tanking. And, of course, basically the governments of those four countries cannot borrow money unless they cut back on all the benefits. They call it austerity. And, of course, the people don't like it. But it doesn't matter what the people want because the governments don't have any money. And this is exactly the same situation we're here in the United States. Only here, why, of course, the Fed simply just prints the money and creates it out of nothing. Whereas, of course, over in Europe, because of the European currency, the countries cannot print their own money, and as a result, why they're simply having to slash their welfare benefits. It's going to come here in America. It's only a matter of time, with 79 million baby boomers retiring, going on Social Security and Medicare. Well, we can keep it going maybe a few more years, but sooner or later, the whole thing collapses, and that's just what they want. Why? Because out of the chaos, as Cloward and Piven said, and you can look it up on the Internet, Cloward and Piven in the 1960s, two communists said, we can destroy America by simply just spending all this money, and eventually the country will go bankrupt, and then we can take over. Well, of course, they're not going to take over. The trilateralists are going to take over. And the trilateralists have financed the communists for years, but the average individual doesn't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, absolutely. I mean, Europe is totally media blacked out.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead, Melody.
You have Europe that is totally media blacked out. I mean, when you talk about the strikes over there, I mean, it just wasn't a couple of 100,000 or 10,000 that media normally reports. It was millions and of EU workers that had a day of to which they ran strikes in Spain and Portugal where they demonstrated. And you also had strikes in the countries which actually halted transportation, and they closed schools and businesses. There was flights to these nations that were canceled, and of course this news is just not being shown in the media here in the States, as because as you mentioned earlier, this is something that you believe and I believe that we face, and we'll be seeing these same types of demonstrations. When you have Spain, they have an unemployment of above 25%. You know, I think that's about the highest in Europe, and certainly they can't. They want their benefits. They want their what the government has, and they don't want the government to change.
Well, unfortunately, the reality is that the government is going to change. The government can't borrow money even to make the basic payments that they have to. They can't borrow money unless they impose these austerity measures, and so even though the people don't want them, the legislatures are voting for severe austerity in Greece and in Italy and in Spain and in Portugal, and of course it's only a matter of time before we have it here. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464. If you here in the Central Coast of California, if you have a question or a comment for our special guest, Melody Cederstrom. Well, what do you see happening here in the next few months, Melody, as far as the economy here in the United States? Do you think we're going to see the fiscal cliff? Do you think that the Republicans and the Democrats will be able to make up their differences, and we can raise certainly the taxes here in the United States? And what happens if we do raise the taxes? Will this solve the problem?
No, I don't think it's... I think what agreement they come to, it's certainly not going to solve the problem, because they're not addressing the problem. They're just the proverbial kicking the can down the road. Personally, I believe we're going to see some sort of agreement. I think they're going to drag it all the way out to the very end, like they normally do. You also have the debt ceiling that's due to be increased either the end of this year or the first of next year. So you have a lot of things going on in addition to this fiscal cliff. You have all these tax cuts that are looking to expire.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, certainly, Melody is simply pointing out that over in Europe, they're having really, literally millions of people demonstrating and rioting over there in Greece and Portugal and Italy and Spain, and you're not hearing about it here in America, or if you do, it's only very casual, but basically it's because the people want what they've been promised, and of course the government can't afford it because they don't have any money. And basically we have the same basic problem here. The only difference is that the Federal Reserve can simply create money out of nothing and pay the bills. But of course we're having to borrow 40 cents out of every dollar we spend. And within a year it'll be 50 cents out of every dollar we spend. We're facing, of course, the fiscal cliff. And suddenly Melody says she doesn't think they're going to be able to solve the problem. If they do, it'll only be very, very temporary. Are we going to increase taxes so we can pay for all all the benefits that have been promised. If we do, that'll take money out of the economy and will cause the economy to begin to turn down. If we cut government spending, because on government programs and welfare, why, of course, it'll shrink the amount of money that's out there and the economy is going to turn down. I don't see any way they're going to be able to prevent the economy from contracting in the year 2013. If you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Melody, you pick the story up from there.
Well, you know, when we have this fiscal cliff, I think they will come to some sort of agreement. They'll probably raise the wealth limit from 250 that he wants now, maybe up to 500 or maybe even a, $1 million for income. And I believe they will, so they will do other things like the unemployment benefits extension. That's ready to expire. And that means workers that lost their jobs after July of 2012, they're only going to get their 26 weeks, and that's down from as many as they've been getting, 99 weeks in state and federal benefits. And I also believe that there's one estimate that I saw where more than 2 million will lose their benefits by January. So a lot of people are going to be affected with this, not only with just the tax increase, but folks like that. We have our unemployment claims, jobless claims were up today, 78,000 a week after the big election. The funny thing about it is there was so much discussion that it was actually from the Hurricane Sandy, but yet some of the two states that were hit the most in these jobless claims was Pennsylvania and Ohio. They were the worst hit. So, again, these are the two states where you had both Romney and both Obama campaigning very heavily in, and these were the ones that had the worst jobless claims after the election. So, really, nothing is what they seem. And again, it's the media that produces and is part of the problem. And certainly any of these reports that we get, they're just all rigged. The numbers that they produce are just as rigged as the stock market.
I agree with you. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I really fear we're going to see a real financial contraction coming the first of the year. And basically, I don't think that the Republicans are going to go along or certainly with dramatic tax increases. Of course, they're talking about, well, what are we really going to do? We're not going to increase taxes. We're simply going to take away deductions. So people will pay more, but we're not going to increase the tax rate. We're just going to take away deductions, and that's only going to be for people. The millionaires, well, millionaires, or anybody who makes over $250,000. Barack Hussein Obama has announced he wants to raise $1.6 trillion. Well, of course, the deficit's running somewhere between $1.15 and $1.5 trillion, and Barack Obama wants to raise taxes $1.6 trillion. But if you look in the little small print, he's saying $1.6 trillion over 10 years. That's only $160 billion a year, and that's in no way going to begin to meet the massive deficits we have. And when you understand that, it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all an effort to confuse you. They really don't want to solve the problem, and they really want, of course, to compound the problem. They really want to wreck our economy. Read what Coward and Piven said, Coward and Piven, back in 1966 in Nation magazine. Coward and Piven talked about how they were going to destroy this country with massive deficit spending, and that's exactly what the Trilateral Commission is doing today. Well, certainly if you have a question or comment, you agree or disagree, I should point out that there were massive demonstrations in Jordan this last couple of days aimed at overthrowing the stable monarchy that's been there. But you see, we're doing everything we can. I mean, you don't have these massive demonstrations in these countries. They don't occur spontaneously. Everybody doesn't say we're going to go out and demonstrate today. These are all carefully planned, and we planned by the CIA and our friends, other government agencies. We are trying to destabilize all of those countries over there. We've already toppled Egypt and Tunisia, and we've toppled Libya. And now we're financing the Al-Qaeda terrorists who are overthrowing Syria. And now we've already, of course, put Turkey into the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood, Lebanon. And now, of course, we're going to be overthrowing Jordan as well. But there's problems in Yemen and Bahrain. And all of these countries are going to come under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood in preparation for the coming war. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to need that war to get the economy going. And, of course, in the process, they'll destroy the value of our currency, impoverish our people. But, after all, we're at war. We're all going to have to make sacrifices, aren't we? Except most people don't understand. The wars are all phony. They're all created. And it was the British intelligence that created the Muslim Brotherhood in 1968, covered in a book we carry called The Devil's Game. The Devil's Game. The CIA poked up control of the Muslim Brotherhood following the Second World War. The devil's game. It really is the devil's game. And of course, suddenly, how many people will die? How many million people will die? How many hundreds of millions of people are going to die in the coming conflict? I don't know. But we are looking at very, very difficult times in the coming years. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Melody, are people suddenly out there, are they purchasing gold and silver? Are people looking for some sort of stability for their finances? Or are you picking up new customers? Or is it mostly just the old-timers?
Well, it's sort of mixed, because we always have a good relationship with our clients, and they're always referring folks to us. So it's sort of kind of a mixed bag. But I think the problem that I am seeing developing is people are waiting. People are waiting to see what's going to happen at the end of the year. People who own businesses, who own corporations, business people, they're waiting to see what they're going to do. They're sort of afraid to do anything. They want to see how they're going to be affected by this if the tax increases come, and not if or how they will be. So everything is sort of on hold. Not only that, as I mentioned before, you have the insurance on their accounts, on their bank accounts. The insurance will expire January 1st on non-interest-bearing accounts. So a lot of these corporations have money sitting in there. And so that they're not going to know what to do with that. Are they going to move it to banks that they feel are too big to fail, putting pressure on perhaps on the smaller banks that they're using locally now? Or are they going to put that money into equipment? Or are they going to put that money, there's certainly, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. So, but people, I believe, are waiting. They've been drawn through this election. They've been drawn through waiting for something to happen during October. Nothing did. Now I think they're waiting for this. And that's the worst thing people can do is wait. I mean, the problem is there. It's not going to go away. It doesn't matter what they do. If they extend the tax cuts, if they come to these agreements, we still have the problem. And I don't think people can really understand that. It's not going to go away.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think people are foolish to wait. I can remember, I'm old enough to remember, 1971. You could buy gold, I guess it was probably the latter part of the 1960s, you could buy gold for $35 an ounce, $35 an ounce, but it didn't do much of anything, it just sort of sat there, and so people bought gold, and it just sat there, it didn't do anything. Today, that $35 an ounce of silver is worth $1,700, $1,750 or $1,760. It's gone up 50 times, ladies and gentlemen. That $35 an ounce gold coin has gone up 50 times. There is no investment that you could have possibly made at that time that was done as well as gold would have in the late 1960s. Well, right now, of course, a lot of people don't want to buy gold at $1,700 an ounce and silver at $3,250 an ounce. But I think we may very well look back in the years that lie ahead as those prices being very, very cheap. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I think these are bargain buys at these levels. Certainly they're expensive. And people need to understand the fundamentals for both the gold and silver. I had a gentleman today, he says, well, I want silver because I can get more ounces for my dollars. And I explain the differences between gold and silver and the fundamentals. And again, the suitability of each person, of course, their own investment objectives when they're purchasing gold and silver. It's something, everything should be taken into account when you're looking to purchase gold and silver. But the prices today, they're still strong. We're still in a bull market for gold and silver. It's going to be all about the precious metals in the future.
I really think so. And you find out that the central banks, which a few years ago were selling gold, are now frantically buying gold. And certainly we know that China's certainly hopes within a few years to become the leading economy in the world. They're the largest gold producer in the world, and they're buying gold frantically. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comments, give us a call. And certainly, Melody, it would appear that they're very knowledgeable people. And when we start talking about central banks buying gold, and certainly Germany would try to get hold of their gold, which has been deposited certainly in London and in New York for a long period of time. So basically, it looks like a lot of the countries are trying to get their hands on their gold because they want to have it to stabilize their currency. Would that be a fair estimate?
I think so. I mean, everybody sees the writing on the wall except here in the States. Everybody sees, I mean, look at the people, how they're reacting in other countries. And yeah, I believe too that it's managed, demonstration. I mean, you just don't get millions of people all together. They just don't come out on their own. So yes, it is an organized but you do see it. So, I mean, people do understand, it seems, in other countries because they've been down that road before. The people here in the States that haven't been down that road, and they've always looked to the government to pull this country out of its problem. And they've been able to do so up until this time. And this time, I don't think they can, I don't think they will, and I don't think they want to. So people do need to preserve. And, we talk about gold and silver. Yes, I sell gold and silver, and I believe in it. I believe it's the only alternative to protecting your finances. And I'm not saying people should go out there and sell every piece of paper that they have and get into gold. But you really do need to have a balanced portfolio with gold and silver, and you do need to look at the fundamentals for both and buy accordingly and buy what's suitable. I mean, my recommendations are usually 80% gold and 20% silver. As the price of silver gets higher, I include a higher percentage in silver, and as people spend more, then, it depends. Maybe we'll even cut a little bit of silver. But again, most people like a balance, and if it's their decision, you have to be educated in order to make an informed decision on what's suitable for you. And that's what we do here. And lots of people don't want to be educated. Lots of people just want to be told what to do. We don't do that here. I mean, you can go to any one of my competitors, and they'll tell you exactly what to do. We will educate you, and in that process, you will learn what to do. And we find that very, I mean, that's the way it should be. And any other way is wrong. Don't let people tell you what to do. Nothing frustrates me more when someone calls me and I ask them, what kind of gold do you have? I don't know. It's like, I don't understand. You don't know what you purchased. I mean, this is expensive. This is the most important investment that you will make in your lifetime. It isn't your home. It isn't your car. It is your gold and silver. It is protecting something that you work so hard for. Why not make an active and be active in those decisions on what you put? And it's not rocket science. It's very simple to understand when we talk about gold and silver and the various products. You want to keep your portfolio simple and basic. You know, we stick to the basics of gold and silver. And you won't be wrong. And your portfolios will perform very well.
And I think what people need is just to learn to be patient, don't you think? I mean, the biggest thing is you don't expect something exciting to happen tomorrow or a week from now or a month from now or 2 or 3 months from now. You have to have a long-term outlook. Don't you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, you don't want to buy gold and silver today thinking it's going to go up next month so you can take your profit out. You know, gold and silver is meant to hold. And even some items are meant to hold longer than others. So
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Melody Cederstrom. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But certainly the central banks throughout the world are frantically buying up all the gold that they can. Why? Because the central bankers know that the world monetary system is about ready to come down. Because how could that happen? Well, there are trillions of dollars that our government has created with absolutely nothing behind them. Well, countries throughout the world are holding trillions and trillions of dollars and as their reserve currency. But as people progressively lose confidence in the dollar, and they will, because of course the Federal Reserve is just printing paper money as if it's going out of style and just putting all this money out there. And the only reason we're not having rampant inflation is because the banks certainly are not lending money, and the corporations, which are all in this together, you must understand the major banks and the major corporations all tied into the Trilateral Commission. And they're trying to keep this thing from falling apart. So the corporations are not investing and putting that money out and putting in new plants. The banks are not, major banks are not lending out large sums of money for developments. And that's why we don't have rampant inflation. If indeed the banks were to lend, if the corporations, major corporations, were to invest, we would have rampant inflation destroying the value of the currency. Now, when that's going to occur, I don't know. It will sooner or later. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call if you have a question for Melody, because she works in this field. She understands it better than most people, better than anybody else I know. Melody, what form should people hold silver in if they're going to hold silver? Should they have silver coins? Should they have certainly silver dollars or Morgan dollars? Should they have small silver bars, 10-ounce or 100-ounce bars? I mean, as far as a means of protecting their wealth.
I think in protecting your wealth, I think when you're looking to silver, it's better to have coins than bars. I believe bars were popular long ago when there really wasn't a market for coins. Mainly there was the Morgan silver dollars in 1986. They started minting the silver eagles and the gold eagles, and I think coining became more desirable than holding bars. If you put a bar in one hand, a 1 ounce bar in one hand, and a 1 ounce coin in the other hand, 95% of the people will choose a coin over a bar. And that's what you want to own. You want something that's desirable, that's recognizable and acceptable. And you want legal tender. Purchase U.S. legal tender coins when it comes to silver. And I like the silver eagles. Yes, you pay a little bit more for those, for a premium. It's good to have them because it's a straight 1 ounce coin. 90% silver is great. It's the most cost effective way in order to buy your silver. You get a lot of silver for your dollars. You have a little bit bigger spread between bit and ask on the silver, but anytime you buy something a little bit closer to spot, you're going to have a bigger spread from bid to ask. The Morgan silver dollars is a wonderful item to own for the pre-1900 coins. We sell a lot of them. We sell the VG Plus circulated, and we also have the nicer ones, but it just depends on where you want to be and back to the suitability, what is suitable for your portfolio. So I really sell the majority of those. I even prefer the rounds, the silver rounds, over the bars. I think, again, cost-effective-wise, I think you can buy silver rounds for probably a little less than you can for some of the bars. So there's premiums on the bars. Back in the 70s and 80s, early 80s, you could, and probably even early 90s, you could buy bars very close to spot price. Well, that's not the case anymore. The only time I recommend bars, you know, 100-ounce bars, are for those folks who plan to have a precious metals IRA and they don't plan on taking possession of their silver. they're just buying it for the silver and they plan on leaving it in there and they don't want to deal with the shipping and so forth, then we can just put in 100-ounce bars if you're looking to put in a significant amount. Then you can get some savings. But for the most part, for silver, you just buy U.S. Silver coins.
Well, no, basically, certainly, would there be any difficulty selling silver bars, do you think, down the line? Would people be willing to buy the silver bars, 100-ounce bars, do you think?
No, I don't think there will be any problem in selling. You just sell it right back into the market. The reason I like coins over the 100-ounce bars is just because they're, you know, you have 1-ounce items instead of 100-ounce items, so it's a little bit easier to, you know, if you wanted to sell 20 ounces instead of 100, it's a lot, it's for sake of ease, convenience, for the round.
And well, again, what is a round? Is it, so is there some sort of a stamp on it? Does it say 1 ounce of silver? What does it say on the round?
On the round, it just say 1 ounce, 999, pure silver.
Okay, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY.
Let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a
Dr. Stan, our guest, of course, is Melody Cederstrom from Discount Gold and Silver. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Melody's one of the most knowledgeable people on this subject that I know. Melody, before we go on, and we do have a caller on the line, but before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, get your website, your telephone number. Get that information out now, would you please?
Yes, Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And our website, dgscoins.com. That's DGS for discount gold, silver, coins, coins.com. And on the homepage, there's a place you can sign up for our weekly newsletter. And if you scroll down, there's a place you can tag on to where you can, it'll take you to the radio page and you can listen to our daily radio program that we produce.
Okay, fine. And don't you have some sort of a newsletter you put out?
Yes, we do. We combined it with health, so it's health, wealth, and political issues. And we have some great writers in the health industry. We have herbalists, and she does a fantastic job in helping people. And, of course, then we have the finance end of the newsletter. So you can just sign up. It usually comes out a Monday or Tuesday each week.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Herman, who's calling. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, ladies and gentlemen, make your preparations for the very difficult times that are coming ahead, and certainly not just financially, but from every point of view. Let me just briefly comment. Isn't it interesting that the government had known, FBI had known about the extramarital affair of General Petraeus in the summer? And yet, of course, they did not announce it before the election. They waited until right after the election, but of course, we should all be focused on the point that basically the election was stolen, that there was certainly all sorts of dozens and dozens of precincts, you know, certainly in Pennsylvania and Ohio, where more people voted than were registered, and were certainly 99 to 100% of the people voted for Obama. Now, you just don't do that. And then, of course, how they held up the military ballots so they couldn't be counted. They just got lost on the way overseas. Oh, shucks, we just lost all those ballots. We just don't know. What a terrible mistake it was. Ladies and gentlemen, they actually stole the election. But you are not to understand that the elections are simply a mirage to give you the idea that we select our leaders. We do not. They're selected for us, so certainly if you haven't read the book, Witness to a Crime by Richard Hage Phillips. Witness to a Crime by Richard Phillips. He spent 3 years going over all the ballots from 2004 in the state of Ohio, where hundreds of thousands of ballots, he and his crew. And there's no question it was a contrived election. John Kerry won, but of course John Kerry's a trilateralist. Senator Kerry was, I'm sure, ordered not to challenge the results of the election. The elite wanted George W. Bush there, and they got him. And but this is what happens over and over again. They rig the elections, but of course they don't want the public to know that. You're supposed to believe the results are legitimate right now. Of course, our attention is focused on what's going on over certainly in the Holy Land. We see the bombing there, certainly the missiles that are being fired from Gaza. But why did they wait till just after the election to fire all those missiles on into Israel? Why didn't they do it the week before the election? Why did they wait till the week afterwards? Israel is mobilizing 30,000 troops. Certainly all the evidence that Egypt may enter the war in Syria on the side of the al-Qaeda rebels who were financing. Why is this all happening after the election, immediately afterwards, when we should be focusing our attention on the fact that the election was stolen and, of course, that many of these precincts were 99 to 100% of the people voted for Obama were obviously contrived? Well, ladies and gentlemen, attention is focused on General Petraeus and his salacious relationship with this married woman. If your attention is focused on what's going on over in the Holy Land and the very real possibility of a war between Israel and the Palestinians, you're not going to think at all about how they contrived another election. Well, right now, let's go to Herman calling from Carmel. Herman, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, there was a report a couple days ago that during Hurricane Sandy at a place, the address is 55 Water Street in New York, there is a repository where one-third of all the stock certificates in the United States are kept, a value of about $31 trillion. They all got soaked in a big mess. They're rotting, decaying, and these are the actual certificates. And so their answer was, well, don't worry, we have it all digitally backed up in our computers. And so I asked the listeners, if this is the kind of security we have as a nation, we could have, you could see your bank accounts wiped out through a disaster overnight, like the people in New Orleans who went there after Hurricane Katrina to the banks, and some of them were told, some of the banks, they were underwater, and they said, well, sorry, unless you can prove you had the money here, we can't help you. And supposedly millions of dollars was lost. So, Melody, I'd like you to address that, and also how can people start on a small way if they don't have a lot of money, and maybe purchase a little each month, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you very much, Herman. Melody, do you have any thoughts on what Herman was saying, how easy it would be, essentially, for us to lose the money we have in the bank? He says it's all electronic, and so many people do not have records so much of what's going on. They don't return our checks to us today. And, of course, what's even more frightening, if there were to be an EMP attack on America, it would wipe out all of the computers and all of the electronic records, and how would you prove you had money in the bank? What are your thoughts on that?
Most people couldn't, and it is. It's not a matter of what they have on records, what you can prove that you have. And if you can't prove it, it's lost. And I believe there's a lot of information that happened in New York that I do believe that we're not being told about. I mean, when you think of their infrastructure, their water system, their sewage system, and everything like that, it was so fragile anyway because it hadn't been repaired, you know, for 100 years. It's the original pipes and so forth, you know, that they put in. So I think you do have I think it's a lot more severe than what they're actually reporting. And you're right, these certificates are gone, and it's so important again. And I don't understand, Dr. Dan and Herman, so many of my clients, they call and they buy gold, and they understand how fragile the system is. They understand Big Brother. They understand there's no privacy, but yet they'll do their banking online. My bank has been after me for years to do online banking, and I keep telling them, no, I'm not going to do it. And, I mean, I get calls monthly. They send me items all the time, these CDs and things like that. I'm old school. I have it on paper, and I follow it that way. I have proof of what I have. And so I don't understand, but the system is very, very fragile, and I agree with Herman. People are going to lose their funds, and there's no way they're going to. And it's going to be those who have the lesser amount. I mean, these are the folks that really depend on some of this technology and the paper and what they're being told. They depend on that, and I think those people will be hurt the most. And people can buy gold and silver in a small way. We don't have any minimum here at Discount Gold and Silver. And we do set up little accounts for folks. I have one lady who sends me a check every week, and we just save it up until we have enough to ship her in a month or two, and she gets a nice little package. We have folks who, I mean, there are things that you can buy. And as long as it's cost effective, if someone calls me and says, I want to buy 2 Silver Eagles, I'll explain to them, well, with shipping, it's not cost effective for you. So you might want to go locally. And I have folks who said, no, I want to support you. I say, okay. And then I'll give them some sort of a deal to make it worth their support for doing it. But you can start small. You can start with 90% silver. That is the most cost-effective way to buy silver. It can be broken down in a face value to where you have $500 to spend. we can work out how much face value you can get for your $500. So there are ways to do it, but people have to pick up the phone and call and find out. It's a very simple process, and we will work with you.
Okay, well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment. But right now we have David calling us from upstate New York. Hi, David. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have a two-part question for Melody. My first part of the question is, do you believe we're headed towards a cashless society?
What type of society?
Cashless society. Do you think that down the line they'd like to get us to a cashless society?
Well, I think that's where we're at. We're certainly going there. People don't use cash. I mean, they use their credit cards. They use the online banking. Everything is processed. Everything is bank-wired. So we're very close to a cashless society.
Okay, David, anything else?
Yeah, and the other part of the question is, if and when we end up in a cashless society, will gold and silver lose its value?
No, I don't think so. I always think you can have two levels, and maybe, you're always going to have a black market. You're always going to have a group of folks who will still use and exchange within localities, so to speak. So even though you have a cashless society, I think there will be a group of people who don't go that way. I'm certainly not going to go that way. So there's a way that we're going to have to still buy and sell, and I think gold and silver will be a very important part in that.
And David, I'm sure there are people who want a cashless society, the elite, mm-hmm. the trilateralists, the people who really run America want that, but we could very well have an EMP attack, and if you don't know anything about that, we're going to be putting out a 4-tape set and a talk on it, and believe me, if you have an EMP attack, there will no longer be a cashless society, because of course this entire electronic system will be closed down for many months, if not years. Anything else, David?
Yeah, the reason I asked Melody this question, I don't know how well versed she's in the Bible, but I know there's a scripture verse, and I don't have the exact scripture verse, but I think it's in the book of Ezekiel. It talks about how people throw their gold and silver out in the street. So I would have to assume that someday that gold and silver will become worthless.
That may very well be true, but that could be 100 years from now. And are you trying to discourage people from buying gold and silver today?
Well, no. What I'm asking is, I guess what she's already told me what she believes in, but I guess there will come in time and point where I believe that eventually gold and silver will become worthless. Whether or not it will happen in our lifetime, I don't know. But
well,
I guess the question.
I think you may very well be right. If it says in the Bible, it'll probably happen. But of course, I believe that people have to try to survive in the society we live in until, of course, these things come about. Melody, how would you respond to David?
Well, I think you're right. I think in today's times, you can almost consider us cashless. However, I think if you read not just that scripture, but read the whole chapter, read the whole book, read the whole, because it talks about a group of people, a wealthy group of people. If I remember correctly, you're talking about a wealthy group of people that they can throw their gold and silver into the streets because it will be worthless, because you can't buy your salvation. You can have all the money in the world, and I think this is the message that I believe. You can have all the money in the world, and then the money in those days were gold and silver. You can have as much as you want, but you'll never be able to buy your way into salvation. So you may as well throw your gold and silver into the streets because it is worthless.
Okay,
and that's how I interpret that. You can also look at it as far as gold and silver as being a cash. Our fiat currency today, you may as well throw it into the street because it is worthless. So I think there's ways that you can look at that differently. But I believe you can't buy your way, you can't buy your salvation.
Amen to that. Okay, David, anything else you want to say?
Yeah, I just caught bits and pieces of what she was saying, Dr. Stan, because she was breaking up on this end. But
okay,
anyway,
well, if you have access to the Internet, if you look at it, this will be posted in our archives tomorrow. And what she said is well worthwhile, because she believes if you read that entire segment, it's really talking about your salvation. You can't buy your salvation with gold and silver. But thanks very much for calling, David, and please read that entire, not just the one segment, but the whole segment, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thanks so much, and our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and of course, Melody's point is, look, our fiat currency is certainly worthless today. Why don't you just throw it in the street? Well, of course, you don't want to because it'll buy things. People are not aware of this, but the time, I think, is going to come where people are going to realize that our paper currency is worthless. And certainly, traditionally, gold and silver has always been worth something. The time may come when it won't be, but it could be, 50 or 100 years from now. It could be much sooner. We don't know. But you'd be very, very foolish not to make preparations for the very difficult times that lie ahead right now. I think people ought to be, well, we could certainly, getting in gold and silver. I think that they ought to be getting in food. I think they ought to be getting in water. I think they'd make preparations for the total breakdown of society. And people say, why should I do that? The Lord is coming. I'm not going to make any preparation. The rapture is coming. And I would say, well, that's fine, but the rapture may come 5 years after America's been destroyed or 10 years after America's been destroyed. And you have been destroyed because you did not make preparations for the difficult times I believe are coming. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-2295. Melody, your comments.
Well, I think when it comes to gold and silver, people look for guarantees. People look for 100%. And what we have to realize is there is no 100%. There are no guarantees in our life. There's only one. And so we have to do the best that we can do. And that's why it's so important for education. And when it comes to finances and when it comes to your investments, you should know what they are. You shouldn't allow a financial planner to tell you what to do. You should tell him. And you need to get the information and process it. So don't look for 100%. And you can't look for 100% return. You can't look for 50% return. The most important thing you can do in today's world is keep what you have. And that's what you should work towards. And I think gold and silver will do that, but I also think it will give you a good return over the years as it has in the past.
And basically, you need to do something to try to preserve your wealth. We'll be back in just a moment. Melody, go right ahead. We've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
I mean, if people don't want to prepare and keep what they have financially that they work so hard for, well, then they may as well just quit working and no longer save and just go on a big trip or something. But you have to preserve what you have. And I understand that everybody would have different budgets, and we all have to do things differently, and that's why I use the word suitability. We all have to do what's best for each of us. And we shouldn't follow the crowd. We can't, and we should always look back and do what's best for us. And we are here to help folks, to help you find what's best for you when it comes for gold and silver.
And I think people are foolish not to make preparations. We don't know what the future holds, but certainly if people say, oh, well, I've got my opinion on this, that, and the other thing, well, then what are they going to do to prepare? And, of course, all they're doing is being critical of what some people are doing. And yet, of course, what are they doing? I don't know what they're doing. But it would appear to me that most of these people are so critical, don't have anything better to offer. And I get this all the time. People are sending emails to me and criticizing me because I don't talk more about the religious aspects of this. Well, certainly, basically, there are a lot of ministers. If I got up here and just preached all the time, how many people would be listening? I'm trying to reach the people who don't know the Lord, try to get them to understand the spiritual battle of what's going on, and point them in that direction. But they're always there, the people that are there, to be critical of anything you do. But basically, they themselves are not doing anything at all. People say, well, we ought to spend all of our time focusing on the Lord. And that is, of course, the reason our country is in the problems that it is today. It's because the good people are not involved, preparing for the difficult times, and certainly trying to change the course of our nation. All they do is want to criticize, but they certainly don't want to be involved themselves. So what are your parting thoughts there?
Well, I agree with you, Dr. Stan. And again, the other preparations are so important. And, you know, I see so many different types of gold products that are being released and leveraging on gold and loaning, you know, buy your gold with a dealer and then he'll loan you money and offshore. I mean, it's just crazy. People are searching for something. And here it is right in their own backyard. All they have to do is buy gold and silver, take physical delivery and put it away. Yes, we do IRAs. We do put gold and silver in IRAs. And yes, you don't take physical delivery of it. But I think gold and silver IRAs, it's an alternative to holding paper. If you're going to decide to keep paper in an
hold
IRA.
Hold that thought, Melody. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening has been Melody Cedarstrom for Discount Gold and Silver. Melody, one more time, let's get out your website, your telephone number, and then we'll let you get to bed back there. Go ahead.
Our telephone number is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And our website is dgscoins.com.
God bless you. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
We'll talk to you real soon. Okay, fine. Well, that was Melody Cedarstrom. And, of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a position to help us, you agree with our message, why, of course, we hope that you'll call us at 1-800-544-8927, and you can advertise with us. You can certainly join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or certainly you can tell others about our program. There are lots of things that you could do to help support Radio Liberty, but if you can't, and you're not in a financial position to support us, but you agree with what we're trying to accomplish, then, of course, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. Now, we have several talks on finances. We have my talk on the financial tsunami. We have our talk on the financial Armageddon. They both come with syllabuses, and they're both probably 6 or 8 years old. But nothing has changed in the interim. We also carry Ed Griffin's excellent book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is probably the best single text on the whole financial system, taking you into the background of the bankers, the banking conspiracy, and it is a banking conspiracy. Here in the United States, we have 6 major banks that control 70% of the assets of our country. I was just reading Sheila Bair's book, Bull by the Horns, and she even comments on that, how these 6 major banks control 70% of the financial assets in the United States. And that, of course, is J.P. Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and they are all part and parcel of the Trilateral Commission until you understand there's a little group of people who control our country and make mockery out of the electoral process. Unless you understand that, nothing makes sense. So once you understand that, why this all begins to make sense, and basically, of course, they control the media, which is the reason you never hear what's going on, and that's the reason I spend 5 hours every day trying to make people understand that a small group of people control America and are using the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a one-world government. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com, that's radioliberty.com. If you want to understand what's going on, the way you can read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, we had a gentleman from England on this afternoon on the 4 o'clock program, and he was an architect. And he's been studying what's going on simply because he's an architect. He sees the occult influence in so much of the architecture of the major buildings of England and throughout the world. And basically he told me that as he'd read my book, it had helped him to connect the dots. And I think my book will help you connect the dots and understand what's really going on in the world today. And then, of course, as we mentioned earlier, why, of course, my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan. And then to understand financially what's going on, you really need, of course, to hear my talks on DVD on the financial Armageddon, on the financial and the financial tsunami. And then, of course, the syllabus with those. And then we strongly recommend Ed Griffin's wonderful book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And understand, ladies and gentlemen, though, behind all of these things are powerful spiritual forces. That, of course, which you won't get from Ed Griffin's book. But it is these powerful spiritual forces that are directing the course of world events as we move towards the New World Order and the New World Religion.
Makes you think of Blake, doesn't it? Makes you think of a lot of things. We're going to be in this yet, Mom.
And so please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection.
Hello, son.
Hi, Mom.
Hello, darling.
New song?
Brand new, first time in the year.
Brand new, my eye. You know, I threw that song out of Yip Yip Yap Hang 22 years ago. Sounds better now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to them the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you of the views expressed here and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, of course, if you're out there across America, why, we'd appreciate your calls at 1-888-244-Liberty. 1-888-24-Liberty. But right now, of course, we have a special guest for this evening. His name is Douglas Dietrich, and Douglas was the historian. He was a worked in the library up at the Presidio in San Francisco until, of course, the Presidio was disbanded. And many of the records there, the permanent records at the Presidio, military Presidio, were actually destroyed. Douglas Dietrich, thank you very much for being with us this evening. Oh, that gets Douglas on the line here. Hi, Douglas. How are you doing?
Fine, Doctor. Much better for speaking with you, and it's wonderful to be here with your beautiful audience. Thank you so much for the honor.
Well, why don't you pick up? Now, you've told us in the past about a lot of the things that you found when you were actually going through the records, the archives up there at the Presidio. A lot of these records have been destroyed. Where shall we start?
Well, I want everyone to know that it is considered the right of the United States government by law to destroy records for security purposes. So a lot of people don't understand that the government considers it their inalienable right to not only destroy records of what they're doing, but they also make it legal to experiment on American citizens. And as a former United States DOD research librarian, I can personally attest that for over 20 years, the law allowed the Department of Defense, not just hospitals, to use Americans as lab rats. And this law was U.S. Code annotated Title 50, Chapter 32, Section 1520, dated the 30th of July in 1977. And it remained on the books until it was repealed under public pressure in 1998. That was 6 years after my resignation from the United States DOD. And the new and revised bill supposedly prohibits the DOD from conducting tests and experiments on human beings, but it allows for exceptions, quote-unquote. And one of the exceptions is that a test or an experiment can be carried out for, quote-unquote, any peaceful purpose that is related to a medical, therapeutic, pharmaceutical, agricultural, industrial, or research activity, which means that they can experiment on you for any reason that they want without telling.
Well, I think people really need to understand that what Douglas says is absolutely right. We have a government document. We call it the Rockefeller Committee Report. It came out of the Veterans Administration in 1944 over the name of J. Rockefeller, but really was prepared by the staff of the Veterans Committee. I'm not even sure J. Rockefeller ever read it. If he had, he probably would have done everything he could to suppress this, because it talks about how they have used the military personnel and the civilian personnel and the prisoners in America for experiments. And, of course, a lot of them had died as a result of this. We have this government document. I actually contacted the woman who wrote it for the Veterans Administration, and she was frankly afraid to come onto our program. Why? Because, of course, the implications of this, certainly people at the highest levels of our government, should be held responsible for murder and for murdering our service people and other prisoners and even the general population. They knew what they were doing. If you've never read the Rockefeller Committee Report, it's really the Veterans Administration Report, 1994. It is available through my ministry by calling 1-800-544-8927. But they're experimenting on us now. No other country in the world will allow genetically modified food. They've all banned it except America. And they're destroying our health. They know what they're doing. They just don't want the public to know. Douglas, you go right ahead.
Yes, sir. And that's very important that Dr. Monteith and I were speaking earlier, which is why I had impressed into his memory the 1944 date. He's absolutely right. 1994 was the date of that particular report. And that was about 4 years prior to the advisory committee to the president's investigation into the human radiation experiment, which I believe came out around 1998. And in terms of the 1944 date, the reason that that was so important was because at that period of time, the Americans were already experimenting with their servicemen. And one of the things that happened after the atomic attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki was that the Japanese demanded during the talk-down processes of peace negotiations between the United States and the Empire of Japan that the United States clean up the mess. And they stated that they wanted to risk no Japanese or servicemen or civilians in cleaning up the radioactivated remains of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So USGIs were sent in to do the job. And they were compelled to do so without safety gear by their own United States government, specifically to measure rate at which their hair fell out and how long it would take for their bodies to become covered in sores. And American mass radiation exposure subjects were considered advantageous because their native speaker fluency in English and the lack of cultural barriers enabled U.S. federal scientists to immediately comprehend their descriptions of symptoms as they deteriorated. And for those who don't believe this, the first large group of American soldiers arrived in Nagasaki on September 23rd of 1945, and these were Marines from the 2nd Division who took that, while the U.S. Army's 24th and 41st Division supposedly seized Hiroshima. Now, these men were ordered to bivouac at Ground Zero, and they paid for that for the rest of their lives, as short as those lives were. And this was to continue through the atomic radiation tests going through the 50s and the 60s. And conservative estimates verify that around 500,000 servicemen and civilian contractors, such as medical observers, etc., of both sexes, were intentionally exposed to massive doses of radiation in post-ceasefire atmospheric nuclear tests between 1945 and 1962. Now, to put this into perspective for the listenership, only a third of 1 million Japanese were killed in Hiroshima and Nagasaki put together. So more American servicemen and service contractees died in American nuclear explosions that were conducted supposedly in peacetime than Japanese were to die in wartime due to atomic weapons. And that should really put this into perspective for people. And millions of American civilians. We're
hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Cindy Douglas is talking about a lot of the experiments were done with nuclear weapons. First of all, of course, following the Second World War, why the Americans, soldiers, Marines, were used to clean up the debris at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, because the Japanese didn't want to go in because there was too much radiation, so they sent Americans in. But we do know that in the years following World War II, they did all sorts of atomic experiments. They exploded all sorts of nuclear devices in the Nevada desert, and they would have certainly our servicemen there without any protection at all to see how much damage would be done to them and how much radiation they could withstand and how much it would take to kill them. Those of you who have never, of course, seen the material put out by Barry Shamish, you would certainly type in his name and then, of course, get the Ringworm Children. These were about 100,000 Sephardic Jewish children over in Israel who were actually used for experiments. They said that they had ringworm, and so they had to shave their heads and radiate them. This was arranged between Paris and, of course, the Atomic Energy Commission here. They wanted to find out how much damage radiation would do to these children, how many of them would die, and thousands of them did die from this experiment. Others, of course, their hair fell out. Many of them have never come back again. Permanent damage to the brain. These were 100,000 children. You probably never going to hear about the ringworm children, but go up on the internet and type in Barry Shamish, ringworm children. And of course, then there were the Yemeni children, about 4,000 of those, kidnapped in Israel, brought to America for nuclear experiments, most of whom were killed. This is the sort of thing that goes on. I don't know whether you ever got into any of that, Dr. Douglas, in your studies, but certainly these are other parts of this whole incredible story. But Douglas was a military historian who actually had the opportunity of going through the military files and certainly uncovering much of the material that was brought out in what we call the Rockefeller Committee Report and is available through my ministry. Go right ahead, Douglas.
Yes, sir. And it's important to remember that, of course, what I was working with were many international documents, but documents concerning America's allies were much harder to come by than documents concerning its enemies. The Americans put a lot of effort into stealing everything they could from the Axis powers or from the Soviet Union. But when it came to their erstwhile allies, their allies were always very reticent, understandably, with trusting anything with the Americans. That included the British. And perhaps we could go into this in another interview, but during the Roosevelt Socialist Administration, President Roosevelt had every intention of invading Canada, the Dominion of Canada, and declaring war on Great Britain. That was his original intent, and that was one of the reasons why the British Royal House made sure that Churchill got to power. Churchill's mother, Jenny Churchill, was an American. He had good American connections. It was very important to get a prime minister in to deflect that hostility from America somewhere else. But after those plans to invade Canada and declare war on Britain, which came within a hair's breadth of manifesting, Churchill never trusted the Americans.
Now, basically, Roosevelt would never have invaded England or Canada, certainly during the Second World War, and he died before the Second World War ever ended.
That's correct. So it's important to remember that all of this took place in the 1930s. Basically, what happened was that while President Roosevelt was the Assistant Secretary of the Navy, he developed what was known as War Plan Crimson. It was conceptualized by him when he was Assistant Secretary of the Navy from 1913 to 1920. And the strategic priorities of the actual plan submitted to the American military commanders in 1935, 2 years after he became president, recommended the United States' invasion of Canada and the seizing of Halifax and Montreal in a lightning campaign before Britain could intervene decisively.
Wait a minute, Dr. Douglas. Why in the world would Roosevelt, simply the Assistant Secretary of the Navy, why would he make such a ridiculous statement?
That was when he conceptualized the plan. He was the Assistant Secretary of the Navy. When he gave it to America's military commanders, he was their executive commander-in-chief by the time of 1935. And this was part of a series of plans known as the Rainbow War Plan, which are propagandized in this day and age as essentially what they call contingency plans. That wasn't the case. War Plan Red was war with the British Empire because they were identified with Imperial Red before Red became universally affiliated in the consciousness of popular media with communism. And War Plan Crimson was a subplan of War Plan Red. And for those who don't understand the intensity of this, it's important to remember that the United States put literally millions of dollars into these plans and thousands of pages. These plans took up just entire volumes. And what happened in 1935 was they tried to put it into effect.
Is there any evidence of this other than the destroyed documents? Has this been written up or described anyplace?
Yes, sir. In August of 1935, over 36,000 regular United States Army and U.S. National Guard troops, elements of five divisions, maneuvered as the so-called First Army in a show of force that anticipated the commencement of War Plan Crimson. And besides from that, we're talking about you could look up War Plan Red, which was published. That would probably be found, probably the easiest place would be to look that up, globalsecurity.org. Also, War Plan Crimson has been published there. Certainly, I gave the documents that I had to them, which they put into their website. And the showing of the flag extended all over upstate New York. It was backed up by 15,000 more U.S. National Guardsmen conducting corps-level operations in Pennsylvania. And the Americans had set up in February of 1945 a congressional appropriation of $57 million to build three border air bases for purposes of preemptive surprise attacks on Canadian airfields. And the base in the Great Lakes region was camouflaged as a civilian airport. It was marketed as capable of dominating the industrial part of Canada, the Ontario Peninsula.
But why in heaven's name would anybody want to invade Canada? Certainly we've always been on very good terms, certainly a common heritage, too many common beliefs, a common language. Well, it doesn't make sense that anybody would want to invade Canada.
It makes sense to a madman like Roosevelt because to him, he felt that by doing this, he would basically gain dominance of Lebensraum, a tremendous agricultural and industrial basis from which to take over the rest of the world. And that was what the war plan, the Rainbow War plans were all about. War Plan Orange was war with Japan, which they knew would ally with Britain as a fellow monarchy. And Canada was going to be a supposedly neutral nation that would be invaded. The government would be abolished, conquest held in perpetuity. More than that, Roosevelt authorized in all of these plans the use of poison gas from inception of hostilities. Would be a war in which humanity and the populations themselves were essentially the front line. The British responded through their naval control by building up their forces in the Great Lakes region that were in the Canadian zone. And this period of Anglo-American tensions ensued to the point where the monarchy knew they would have no place to retreat to if the Third Reich were to cross the English Channel. So as a result, what they did was they bought Americans off by giving them the opium trade in China. That is what brought America into direct conflict with the Japanese Empire on the Chinese mainland. The Japanese were trying to interdict the opium shipments. The British had been running them for almost 100 years. A distant relative of mine, Commissioner Lin, sacrificed his career fighting the British during the Anglo-Chinese Opium War. The British won those wars, forced everyone in China to get onto opium as a drug. They were manufacturing cannonball-sized balls of opium in India under the British Raj, shipping them up rivers into China, where everyone from the lowest peasant to the highest member of the Qing nobility was smoking opium. It eviscerated China. And when the Japanese moved in, they had to interdict the opium trade to have a functional empire. The Americans were given the opium trade under the Roosevelt administration to buy them off from invading Canada and depriving the royal family of a place to retreat to, should the Third Reich cross the English Channel. And that was how we wound up into war with Japan.
Well, of course, most people have heard of the Opium War, as they probably think that the wars were fought to stop the opium trade. They really were not. There were wars that were actually fought so the British could continue the opium trade. The Chinese and the Chinese emperor, the Chinese government, didn't want the opium trade. And the British, of course, went in and said, you will have the opium trade. They had a war. They defeated China. And then they, of course, continued using the opium to destroy the infrastructure of that nation and make it dependent upon Great Britain. You're absolutely right in that respect. Go right ahead.
Yes, and by way of detail, people can also reference U.S. President Roosevelt's actual 1935 plan for the invasion of Canada. That appeared in Glasnost in the archive of the 1st of February 1995, 23rd of September 2011. I gave it to the Glasnost website to put up, so that was at www.glasnost.com. I mean, people should be able to find it through those hints, but it's definitely something that was considered extremely seriously. And it kind of diverges us from what we were speaking about with medical experimentation. So we should probably turn back to that, because a lot of people might be wondering exactly why do doctors who are normally trained to uphold the welfare of the patient above all else, do no harm, why would they be willing to cooperate with these diabolic experiments that were conducted on Americans for so many years. So we can talk about that when we're back from the break, Doctor.
All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Douglas Dietrich, who was, of course, a librarian. He actually went through the library files up at the Presidio for a number of years, and certainly apparently it was ordered to destroy a number of the records that were there. And, of course, when he was up there, of course, he came in contact with Anton LaVey. Of course, it was Colonel Aquino. Colonel Aquino, of course, was a high-ranking military officer who was a Satanist, who actually was deeply involved in Satanism while working in the American military. This is an incredible story. If you look it up, this is no question at all. Colonel Aquino. Douglas, go right ahead. You were talking certainly about, go right ahead.
Oh, yes, sir. When many of these men who were exposed to the atomic explosions that we were originally talking about, they were forced to sign a document stating that whatever they witnessed, saw, or heard would not be revealed for 20 years under penalty of execution and or life imprisonment. And this was called the Atomic Secrets Act. And no entries were made in the service jackets, medical records, or orders of these soldiers or sailors. And because of this sworn secrecy, it's as if the testing never happened. And the Atomic Secrets Act was finally lifted in 1996. Again, this was years after my retirement as a Department of Defense Research Librarian, which was 1992. So we're talking about its lifting not 20 years, but 52 years after its imposition. And the veterans who were left alive were very, very few in number, because so many of them had already died of radiation poisoning. And so in terms of the millions of civilians who were exposed to this kind of testing by being downwind of so many of these atomic experiments, the ones that took place in Yucca Flats, Nevada in particular, the people in Utah, many other areas, were heavily exposed. They have never been recognized as victims of American government radiation testing, but nevertheless were monitored extremely closely. And this is truly abuse of humanity that needs to someday be addressed. Well, during the Clinton administration, to his credit, they were trying to address this with the President's Advisory Committee on the Human Radiation Experiment. But unfortunately, what they found was that all of the records of the Atomic Energy Commission were essentially destroyed. The few that survived due to bureaucratic incompetence. And there's two things that factor into this. In terms of the military doctors, it's important to remember that a military doctor is a soldier first and a doctor second. When I worked at the Presidio Military Base Library as a DOD librarian, I had to conduct many liaison operations, or duties would be a better word for it, with the Letterman Army Medical Center, which is one of the most advanced hospitals within the U.S. medical system. and it trained 25% of all Army doctors at the time that it was in operation, which was for many, many years. And Edmund G. Howe, at the time of the Uniformed Services University, himself stated that the military physician accepts the obligation to place military interest over his own interests and those he might otherwise have as a civilian doctor when he becomes a military officer. So in this sense, he's a soldier with a special technical expertise. Thus, during combat, which America has constantly been in, declared or not, Vietnam, Korea, Afghanistan, Iraq, these are all armed conflicts which are undeclared, illegal, and unconstitutional. During periods like this, a physician is given free sway in terms of experimentation. And the end result is this led doctors like Dr. Harold Apple, A-P-P-E-L was the spelling of his family name, to become conscientious objectors, especially during the Vietnam War, when during his hearing, he stated that upon reviewing Navy documents, quoting them, he understood that the purpose of the medical corps was to enable the fighting force to attain its mission, not to heal the sick. Now, all of that sounds quite sensible until you realize that they're killing their own men, and they're experimenting on their own men, and that no mission is being accomplished. Now, in the civilian realm, unfortunately, many of the higher universities, such as UCSF, where I earned the credit equivalent
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Douglas Dietrich right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Douglas is simply saying that in the military, many times they actually experimented on the enlisted personnel. And basically, of course, doctors are not supposed to do that. But when you, of course, are in the military, you do what you're told. And unfortunately, that is the way the system works. And if you don't, they will certainly court-martial you and send you off to prison. So when you're told to do something, even though it's morally wrong, well, you better do it. Go right ahead, Douglas.
Yes, sir. And unfortunately, in January of 1994, President William Jefferson Clinton, when he convened the advisory committee to investigate the human radiation experiment as originating in the Manhattan Project of the 1940s, which, unknown to most Americans, had far less to do with building atomic bombs and far more to do with radiation experiments, one of the things that happened at Trinity site was they ordered all of the troops to scour the area, if you can believe that, of Ground Zero, and pick up what was known as, at that time, I forget the name of it, it was, they were basically ordered to pick up the sand that had turned into glass. And, of course, all of these men died of radiation cancer. They were given no protective equipment whatsoever. When you take a look at the photograph of Dr. Oppenheimer and General Leslie Groves at Ground, near Ground Zero, they are wearing little rubber galoshes, these white booties that prevent the radiation from seeping in through the soles of their shoes and infecting them. Such equipment was never given to the troops that they sent to scour the area and police it and clean up all of the sand that had turned into glass at that time. So they knew about the radiation. That was photographically obvious. And yet they were basically experimenting with their men. Now, all of this is, even though it's not justifiable, almost comprehensible within that military matrix. But why would this be going on with civilians? In the final report presented to the president on the 3rd of October in 1995, the committee found that up until the early 1960s, it was common practice for American civilian physicians to conduct research on patients without consent. And a lot of this had to do with the fact that the Nuremberg Code for doctors was something that was concocted during the Nuremberg trials by the American Medical Association, but it was never applied to American doctors, and this is why we got many universities, such as the UCSF, where I myself was to earn the credit equivalent of a master's degree in medical journalism over a period of almost a decade. The UCSF, as well as the University of Rochester, University of Boston, many other universities that were extremely prestigious took part quite enthusiastically in human radiation experiments. And they did this because they felt that many of the patients really didn't need to know about what was being done. And a lot of their records, of course, later mysteriously disappeared. And that's what the committee discovered under the Clinton administration, that the records of much of the nation's recent history has been irretrievably lost or simply could not be located. and only the barest description remained for the vast majority of many experiments. And the Department of Energy, for instance, which was the heir to the Atomic Energy Commission, claimed that all pertinent records of its predecessor organization had been destroyed during the 1970s, and in some cases as late as 1989. CIA records, of course, are all classified. And that brings us down to exactly what they were doing. What is it that the absence of medical records is essentially covering up? The committee concluded that the government has the power to keep secrets of immense importance to us all. Well, I can personally tell you a lot of the records that I destroyed and was able to pass out to reporters, that was able to pass out ultimately to the point where they were being published. And because of this, people are now aware of some of what happened.
Wait a minute. You mean when you were ordered to destroy these documents, you were actually giving some of them to reporters? Wasn't that a dangerous thing to do?
It was very much so. Now, keep in mind, I didn't do it through my own name. I maintained total anonymity for many years. And much of this was done by reporters who were doing work on their own. Many journalists were doing work on their own. But the end result was that it was not just my efforts alone, but the efforts of many people who were dedicated to find out what their government was doing to them that led to exposure of American military biowarfare attacks on their own public from the 1950s through the 1960s. One of the most notorious was the United States military bio attack on San Francisco, where, of course, I worked through the Presidio Military Base, which is, of course, the Western Defense Command Center, which is in charge of Hawaii, and the vast majority of Western states.
Now, are you talking about certainly when they had the ships going along the coast releasing these bizarre bacteria that infected so many people?
That's quite correct, sir. That's one good example of it. It's probably the preeminent example of American attack on their own population.
And basically, of course, there were a number of people very ill at Stanford. One of them actually died, and when they sued the government, why, of course, they said we can't release any information. Too bad he died, but it's a military secret, and so there was no compensation for the man they killed. Well, Douglas, did you have any, did you find anything in the files there about that tragic instance when they were spraying from the ship with some sort of a bacteria? They probably thought it was fairly innocuous, but a number of people did get very ill from it, and at least one person died. Did you find any references to that at all?
Yes, sir, through the Letterman Army Medical Center. Not as many as I would have liked because this was a Navy operation. The only reason they were cooperating with the Army was because they were in area. Now, of course, we had a Coast Guard station, and the Coast Guard tried to maintain as many of its records as it could to itself. But what I was able to find out was that the clouds of bacteria that were sprayed over the city and county of San Francisco, which is both the city and a county, made at least 12 people critically ill. They developed pneumonia to the point of near death. At least one elderly man was acknowledged to have died from the bio attack that his own military launched against his own nation. And the rest, of course, got to the point where there was rumors that some infants had died as well, but again, no one ever pursued that, and so there was no compensation. But what I can tell you for a fact is that other secret attacks used bacteria as well. They were sprayed into New York City subway tunnels, crowds at Washington, D.C. airport, onto highways in Pennsylvania. Biowarfare testing took place on site military bases in Virginia, in Key West, Florida, and off the coast of California and Hawaii. So this was quite common. The American military has been attacking the people that it's sworn to defend for quite some time. So this is something that Eileen Welsom, a journalist, wrote about in her plutonium file, in which she talked about government physicists and their propagandists who have covered up so much of what was done to American people throughout this many years. She was the person who ultimately was able to take advantage of some of the records that I leaked. So I do.
Whatever happened to her? She came under tremendous pressure, didn't she, for getting the truth out?
She did, and you know, to my eternal shame and disgrace, I never bothered to follow up, and I do not know what happened to her because I was too busy, pretty much hiding myself for quite some time, and was successful at doing that to a great extent during the 10 years and 10 months that unfortunately was the terminal decade of both of my parents. As I was a care provider for them, I pretty much retreated totally from the world for a good deal of time. There were some things that I did, all of which were anonymous. Now that I'm coming out into the open and exposing myself, there's a lot of these people and their fates that I'm totally ignorant of and would need to count on people like you or the listening audience to ultimately inform me about the future. So, yeah, I don't remember what happened to her.
Hold the thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stanley Douglas is talking about some things I know something about, because he was talking about how the Navy was going along the West Coast, just offshore in the San Francisco area there, spraying bacteria over the general population with the idea of seeing how it spread. Well, of course, it was not supposed to be a dangerous bacteria, but it was, and a number of people came deathly ill. One gentleman died at Stanford University, and everything was done to cover this up. They also sprayed, certainly, in the subways in New York. They did all of these experiments on the American people, and they lied about it. They've done everything they could to cover this up. Fortunately, this is all covered in the report. We call it the Rockefeller Committee Report. It's available from my ministry. We got it from the national government. I got my copies from the U.S. printing office in Washington, D.C., where they only printed 35 copies for a nation of almost 300 million people. And when I asked the man there at the printing office, why did you only print 335 copies for the entire nation? Now, they kept printed copies that were given to the people on the Veterans Administration Committee. But for the general population, they only printed 35 copies. And the man told me, well, because it was so expensive to print them, well, we print them ourselves. And we certainly done it was distributed most of the original 25 of the 35 copies I bought, and then, of course, we've given that to many other people. But we call it the Rockefeller Committee Report. You can call it the Veterans Administration Report, 1994. But it's available from our ministry. Ladies and gentlemen, they've used the American people as guinea pigs, and they've used the military personnel as guinea pigs, and they've killed American civilians, and they've killed many, many military civilians and made them military personnel, and they made them very ill, and nobody is ever held responsible. And it really doesn't make sense when you understand the spiritual forces that really control our government with an intense hatred of humanity. And when you understand that, it all begins to make sense. Now, we do have the official government report. You will never look at the world through the same eyes again. After reading the report, that's available through my ministry, and of course, books such as the Plutonium Files, going into how they experimented on all these children. They took orphans, they took mentally defective children, they brought children from Israel over here to do experiments on them. There were about 4,000 Yemeni children who were actually kidnapped from Israel. Their parents were told that they'd suddenly went to the hospital and they just disappeared. We have nobody after they were kidnapped and brought here. And most of them, or many of them, were actually killed in the experiments that were carried out following the Second World War. And you can verify that by going up on the internet and typing in Barry Shamish, Yemeni children. Barry Shamish, Yemeni children. Of course, you can get the other story of the 100,000. They destroyed their brains and killed many of them. That is the story of the ringworm children. Barry Shamish, the ringworm children. How could these things go on? Well, what people don't understand is they're very evil people who control our government, and they control the media, and most of this is totally suppressed. Go right ahead, Douglas.
Yes, to back up what Dr. Montes is saying, it's important to remember that in 1995, due to the committee investigation into the human radiation experiment, the Energy Department itself, the Department of Energy, the DOE, as opposed to the DOD, which I work for, admitted officially to over 430 radiation experiments conducted by its predecessor organization, the Atomic Energy Commission, between the years 1944 and 1974, in which over 16,000 people were radiated, the overwhelming majority of whom did not give consent. So if they're admitting to that, you can imagine to what they're not admitting to. But definitely, I mean, a good example of this was at UCSF, where I earned my credit equivalent of a master's degree over the period of a decade while I was acting as medical case historian and senior patient advocate for my parents in what unfortunately turned out to be their terminal decade. And UCSF exposed 29 patients, some with rheumatoid arthritis, to total body irradiation at the level of 100 to 300 rad dosages to obtain data for the American military. And this was conducted without the patient's knowledge. This is the kind of atrocity that we're speaking of. And they administered radioactive material to psychiatric patients throughout the city and county of San Francisco and to prisoners in San Quentin. And San Quentin is, of course, where in World War One the American military began the inception process towards what was known to all of humanity as the greatest natural disaster in history. Well, there was nothing natural about it. It was the application of a bioweapon. And what had happened was that the Americans were very familiar with the use of bioweaponry in their campaign against the Native Americans. And basically, what had happened was between 1790 and 1898, much of the time, while the United States was nominally at peace, the Indian Wars became a fixture of life. And except for the War of 1812, the Mexican War, and the Civil War, they occupied America's frontier army constantly for 30 bloody years after Appomattox. Indian fighting was year-round, and the regular army fought more than 1,400 battles. That's one Indian massacre a week during that period. During that time, they forced a lot of Indians onto reservations, and in this various trails of tears, they would, during the wintertime, give them blankets infected with smallpox. And ultimately, they managed to exterminate 100,000 original people using this methodology. Well, during World War One, the Germans won the First World War. They won it on the Eastern Front. The Treaty of Brest-Litovsk forced Bolshevik Russia to surrender after the abdication of the Tsar, to surrender 33% of her population to the Germans. That's one-third of her population. A quarter of her territories, 25%, and over half, 50% of her industries. Germany was unassailable, and the Kaiser's position was such that it would take an atomic bomb on Berlin to dislodge his regime at that point, and he was massing his forces and the resources of a conquered Russia to turn against the West. Now, when he was doing that, the Americans were throwing this tiny, comparatively speaking, expeditionary force across the Atlantic. And they said, well, this isn't going to stop the Kaiser, and it's not going to lead to any invasion of Germany itself. So we're going to use these men as human bullets, vectors of avian flu. Now, everyone knew the cause of flu. Flu comes out of Asia because of the avian population, the chickens, the poultry that people live with in subsistence agriculture, along with the pigs. The particulate fecal matter of the chicken or shedded feathers get into a lot of the pig food or feed as they wander around the subsistence agricultural level communities in Asia. The pigs are cooked and eaten. The avian viruses get into the human population by the pigs. So this is what's known as avian / swine flu. All flus that stepped out of Asia, this is why so many flus have Asian names, are avian flus. All flus are swine flus to one degree or another. And in terms of what the Americans did, they took convicts out of San Quentin and they conscripted them. They put them into unrefrigerated boxcars with live chicken and shipped them to the region of Fort Lewis, Kansas. By this methodology, they incepted what's known as chicken roll, because these Americans were exposed to all the particulate fecal matter, all the shedded feathers of these chickens. By the time they got to the Fort Lewis, Kansas area, they were put with 56,000 other new recruits at a hastily built cantonment called Camp Bumpton on the Fort Riley Military Reservation in Haskell County, Kansas. They were forced to live, eat, clean the cages of these chickens, live with them, you know, eat them. And finally, they incepted what was known as an index patient. That means someone who manifested the flu in a way that it had a 10 to 20% mortality ratio. It's a variant of the hemorrhagic fever. So when it's too virulent, it cannot serve as a bioweapon. All of the convicts, as far as I knew through the records that I was dealing with at Letterman Army Medical Center, the original inceptors, the original carriers who incepted the flu died. But other people were able to survive. They became carriers. One of these men was named Albert Gitchell. His family name was G-I-T-C-H-E-L-L. They made him cook. So by the time they threw the American Expeditionary Forces across the Atlantic, they were arriving in a nominally neutral Spain, which was playing fast and loose with its neutrality, on what were known as coffin ships. The vast majority of them arrived dead. This was, hence the name, Spanish flu.
Now, basically, ladies and gentlemen, what really happened, of course, was that we had all these military recruits, and I think they were in Kansas, weren't they, Douglas? Was that where it started?
Yes, sir.
And it started in Kansas, and of course, they hear all this, all these military recruits certainly are sick. And so the medical corps said, well, certainly don't send these patients to Europe. Don't put these people on the ships. Isolate them until they're over this disease, and then, of course, they can be sent. And instead of doing that, in other words, isolating them and trying to stop the spread of the disease, they took all of these very ill soldiers, and they put them onto troop ships, many of them with healthy people. And by the time they got to Europe, of course, many of the people had died. And now we were able to spread this disease all over Europe. Now, ladies and gentlemen, when I was studying this many years ago, the figure was 20 million people died of flu at that time, equal to the number of people who died. More recent studies are suggesting it's 50 to 100 million people died. But this was instrumental in ending the war. Most people don't understand. This is what ended World War I. And this is, of course, why the Germans were forced to sign a treaty. They weren't defeated in battle, but they certainly agreed to stop the war because their troops were decimated. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. And it's important to remember that there's a lot of mystery surrounding this. One of the men who may have been involved was a man who was named Dr. William Henry Welch, and he worked with the Rockefeller Institute. Indeed, he helped to create the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research. And he's on record as supposedly protesting or objecting to basically the placing of all of these men together in these hastily built cantonments and jamming them together and not quarantining them. Now, supposedly, he did this protestation, and it was overridden by the Army Surgeon General William Gorgas. Now, the records I was dealing with seem to suggest just the opposite, that it was Army Surgeon General William Gorgas who was protesting putting these men together, and that Mr. Welch was insistent on their being placed together. So there's a lot of mystery and controversy concerning that, but no one can argue in this day and age with what happened. What happened was, by this point in history, they have concluded that 100 million people worldwide died. It edged out the Black Plague in terms of its fatality ratio. The modern equivalent to that would be 1 billion people dead, and another 1 billion whose lives would be cut short by 15 years because of the permanent lung damage caused by exposure to the avian/swine flu. There was blowback, of course. 20 million people died in the United States. There were two waves of this flu, which went totally unreported. They were suppressed by America's information and propaganda agencies, what we call the media, because they wanted to preserve wartime morale. But in Philadelphia alone, the number of dead quickly overwhelmed the city's ability to handle the bodies. They were forced to bury people without coffins in mass graves and to begin to use steam shovels to dig these mass graves. As a matter of fact, all of the United States ran out of coffins within a week. There were more people killed by this flu in 24 hours than AIDS has killed in 24 years. This flu killed more people in a single year than the Black Plague killed in a century. There was nothing natural about this flu. This truly was a bioweapon of unparalleled proportion and deployment. Fathers would kiss their families goodbye. They would go to work, and they wouldn't come home. It creates what's known as a cytokinetic storm within a healthy young immune system. People like Dr. Monteith and myself are elderly enough where the flu would not impact us. Our immunosystems are too worn out. Infants have not developed a proper immunosystem yet. They would be left unharmed by this flu. But the young, healthy, strapping men of combat age, or young, healthy women, but particularly young, healthy men of combat age, would be destroyed by this flu in what's known as the cytokinetic storm, where your immunosystem overreacts, and it ultimately attacks the virus and everything else in the body, and it melts the lungs, which basically you cough up in a pink phlegm out of your mouth and you're dead within 24 hours. And because of this, it wasn't just the troops in the field. Even though they were the most impacted initially, these men who had been exposed to poison gas, bayonets, bullets, and bombs were all afraid of catching the flu. But it impacted men on the assembly line, the industrial production line. Because of what was going on, nobody could produce enough munitions for the men at the front. This is why Germany had the super peace. This is what ended the First World War. That gives people some impression about a true super weapon, something far beyond anything like the atomic bomb. There was more ink spilled concerning these atomic bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki than there was blood spilled in the Second World War. And they continued to popularize that as a distraction. Nobody really cared about the Manhattan Project. The investments going into the Manhattan Project started so late in the war that the Germans and the Japanese were far ahead in atomic development. We're talking about something that started very late in 1942, and what was it the Americans were really concentrating on? Well, Washington began to mobilize for biological warfare in early 1942 under President Roosevelt through a man named George W. Merck, the president of a famous drug company, M-E-R-C-K. And the Merck manual was a household name. Merck was a household name. Generations of physicians had come to use his manual as a trusted guide for diagnosing and treating disease. And what the Americans did was they put him in charge of America's real super weapon project in World War II, the Germ Initiative. This had its headquarters at Camp Dietrich, not spelled the same way as my family name. It's spelled D-E-T-R-I-C-K. It was an old army base in rural Maryland, close enough to Washington, D.C. for quick responsiveness, but supposedly far enough away to assure a margin of isolating safety. To put this next to the Capitol itself is madness. But this is what they did, and the work got underway and expanded from this place, Camp Dietrich, from a rural outpost in farm country. It grew overnight into Fort Dietrich, a dense metropolis of 250 buildings and living quarters for 5,000 people. The post was ringed with fences, towers, floodlights, guards under orders to shoot first and ask questions later. They kept machine guns loaded. The scientists were issued pistols, which they kept at their sides and nearby on workbenches. There was nothing at Los Alamos that had this level of security. The headquarters building at the heart of that Fort Dietrich compound had its own set of armed guards on alert around the clock. All personnel had identity passes with employee photos. This was a security precaution that didn't even exist at Los Alamos. It became widespread in future decades on the basis of its success at Fort Dietrich. Persons leaving the post surrendered their photo passes to the guard, and accidentally keeping one could lead to arrest and interrogation. That's how serious all of this was. Now, you never hear of this, because this was the real weapon of warfare. Now, let's talk more about finalizing that when we come back, Doctor, or at least tell people about where they can find out more from my website with your permission.
All right, fine. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment. Our guest, of course, is Douglas Dietrich. Fascinating information, Sidney. The number killed here in America with Sidney, I'm going to have to find out where Douglas got that figure, but certainly there's no question that countless millions have died of this terrible disease, and it was all fostered, ladies and gentlemen. That is the part you have to understand. This was all planned and arranged. Douglas, how can people get to your website, get your information?
Well, I'd like to emphasize the fact that my website is www.douglasdietrich.com. Douglas is spelled with one S, and Dietrich is spelled just like the famous actress's name, Marlena Dietrich, D-I-E-T-R-I-C-H. So douglasdietrich.com. And for people who are using phone and landlines and do not have access to a computer or a website, if anyone wants to take advantage of our holiday offer while we still have some of my DVD sets left, feel free to call my manager, Florian Fenton, at Laughing Communications through the following phone number. And I'll give that out in just a second. I want people to get their pens and papers ready if they're nearby. In the meantime, I'll tell you that the DVD set contains two DVDs. One is Roswell and the Rising Sun, which unfortunately led directly to my mother's death. And that's the price one pays as a whistleblower, and that could be gone into in perhaps another interview at some other point in time. But Roswell and the Rising Sun talks about the Japanese manipulation of America's obsession with biological warfare through the Battle of Los Angeles, when the Japanese hovered over Los Angeles with their dirigibles, in the night of February 24th through the 25th in 1942. The Americans responded by writing Los Angeles off, and they were going to cordon it off, and because of that, they inoculated as many men as they could to surround Los Angeles, and they basically administered a yellow fever vaccine because they thought the Japanese were aerosolizing and spraying yellow fever over Los Angeles. This wound up wiping out no less than over 4 divisions of men, and they had to stop the vaccinations by April 15th of 1942, but by that time, 51,000 military personnel had died, 330,000 had to be severed out of service due to permanent liver damage. And this prolonged the war by 4 years. This was Japan's version of Stalingrad or Leningrad. I speak of it in technical detail in the DVD Roswell and the Rising Sun, and that's paired with the second DVD, Satan's Crusaders, in which I talk about Colonel Michael Aquino, the officially recognized satanic chaplain of the U.S. Army, who under orders I was liaison to for almost a decade. And so I talk about the satanic subversion and insurgency into our armed services in that DVD. Both of them are offered for the price of one, and you can contact Lorian Fenton through the following phone number, 415 area code, 895-6069. Once again, that phone number is 1-415-895-6069. And just a third time, 415-895-6069. And,
Hold that thought for just a moment here. We're going to be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. That was one more time. I want you to get out the telephone number where people can get your DVDs.
Yes, sir. Once again, that's 415 area code 895-6069. And 415-895-6069. And hope that people will be able to call in. And like I said, we're offering two for the price of one through the holidays.
One more time, the telephone number.
Yes, sir. 415 area code 895-6069.
And these are two DVDs that Douglas has put out. God bless. Thanks very much for being with us, Douglas.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and certainly, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience, we'd love to hear from you. Certainly, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or if you'd like to advertise with us, or if you'd like to get our products, because all of these things do help us to maintain our networks, and we do have very effective networks both morning and afternoon and evening, and we do this with the help of the people out there who believe in what we're doing. And if you're not in a position to help financially, but if you agree with us and you'd like to help, then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're exposing the truly diabolical forces working behind the scenes, intent upon destroying humanity. And that may sound like a pretty powerful idea, destroying humanity. I mean, who in their right mind would want to destroy humanity? And the answer is, of course, nobody in their right mind. We're not dealing with people in their right mind. If you get my talk on the Agenda 21, the covert plan, we take you to Elberton, Georgia. You'll see the pictures of the Georgia Guidestones. We go into the background of the secret society that actually put up these Guidestones, and they start out by talking about maintain humanity at less than 500 men, and they're talking about killing over 90% of the population of the world. And these people are deadly serious. And certainly we hope that you'll get my talk, Agenda 21, the covert plan, and get the syllabus that goes with that. It's got important information. Then how do we begin to make any sense of what's going on? You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. It's a very simple book. It's not difficult to read. You can read it in a few hours. but it will change your life, as it has the lives of so many people. We have somewhere between 50 and 100,000 copies of this book out all over the world. In fact, I interviewed a gentleman this afternoon from England, and somewhere he got a copy of my book in England, and he is an architect. He's been studying suddenly the occult influence in architecture for many years, and suddenly it all begins to make sense now. And certainly this is the story we hear often, how this little book has changed people's lives, and that's the reason it's written. You can, of course, get the story as the name. You can watch the DVD. It is called The Brotherhood of Darkness. You can get that by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we have many, many other talks. We certainly encourage you to get those to help us get the information out about the secret societies working behind the scenes that control the world. Certainly, we have my talk on the dark secret. We have my talk on the forbidden secret. The syllabuses go with both of those. We have certainly my talk on population control. We have certainly planned population reduction. We have Nandir College genocide. And my latest talk, Population Control, the Covert Agenda. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that you'll tell others about our programs, and that you go to our website and listen to our programs, watch our DVDs, read our newsletters, because they'll give you a wonderful analysis of what's going on. You can get certainly copies I'll take four or five newsletters and put them into a little pamphlet. They're all described in our catalog, which you can get by calling that 1-800-544-8927 number, and then please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.
Let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for caring about your world. It is Friday. It is the 4th of November. We're so glad to have you join us today. Thank you for honoring us with allowing us into your home. That's what it's all about. You know, we've got homeschooled children listening to this program. We've got retired people. We've got working people. We got businesses. I love it. That pizza place up in Montana that puts us on the air. Uh-oh, it may be Wyoming, and they're going to email me, I have a feeling.
Colorado.
Colorado? Yeah, right, that's it, Colorado. That listen to the Power Hour and have all their patrons listen to the Power Hour. Hey, that's cool, man. They get an earful.
Nothing better than a captive audience.
That's right. Yeah, you've got to listen to this. Anyway, we thank you very, very much for joining us today, and I'm going to take a couple of phone calls. If you're outraged, if you're happy, if you're whatever, because we are, in about 3 or 4 minutes, going to be talking to Dr. Chauncey Crandall, Raising the Dead, A Doctor Encounters the Miraculous. And I'll tell you what, he kept me up half the night last night because I could not put this book down. It is excellent. It really is. I am not giving away my book. I am not loaning it out. Not this one. Because I really do, for a lot of